Dr. Xin Zhang is a doctor and researcher specializing in cognitive neurology. Xin is the 2022 recipient of the Susan and Isaac Wakil John Monash Scholarship Award. She completed a physics degree at the University of Sydney and continued on to a medical degree at the same university, for which she was awarded first class honours. She is about to undertake a PhD in neurology in the UK, where she aims to advance the development of dementia treatment. Xin, a very warm welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Justin.
Now, as I understand it, you are joining us today from London. How long have you been in London for?
Oh, I've been at London for 3 months now.
And what brought you to the UK? This is part of the scholarship, right?
Yes. Yeah, so the choice of going to the UK, I think, has been made by myself about 10 years ago.
Okay.
When as a medical student, I came to London for an elective in the neurology hospital. They have a very, very famous and well-established neurology hospital here called the National Hospital for Neurology and Neurosurgery. Or the short version of that is the National, or we call it the Queen Square. And it's essentially a site of pilgrimage for Australian neurologists. So a lot of us have been here, studied here for a year or a few months. And then there's sort of a lot of talk about it. So I thought, well, back then I had to come and see it for myself.
Yes.
And after I came, I thought, oh, I have to come back one day. So that was 10 years ago, and I'm finally back now.
How are you finding it being back in London?
London, I feel, has changed in the 10 years. I've changed.
Maybe a bit of both.
It seems bigger. It seems very diverse. There are definitely a lot of great food options here compared to when I remember back 10 years ago. and maybe it's post-coronavirus as well. It feels very busy and happening.
Okay, so let's wind the clock right back. You were telling me before we started that you're actually born in China. In Beijing. So I'd like to know about the early years and when you came to Australia.
Yeah, so I was born in Beijing, which was another very big city. And my parents, they trained as public health physicians in China, and actually they left me with my grandparents because they came out overseas to study. And so I was actually brought up by my grandparents up until I left Beijing when I was 8 years old. And moving from Beijing to Sydney, which is where I spent the rest of my time during my childhood, wasn't very easy, I have to say, because I didn't know a word of English there on my first day of school in Maroubra Bay Primary. So that was challenging, but and also the weather was very different. Beijing was often cloudy and cool, and you know, Sydney beachside was sunny,
very hot.
Yeah, so completely different. So it took me a few years to get used to it.
Well, I just have to go back when you were saying you were brought up by your grandparents. Where were mum and dad?
So my mom was doing a master's initially in the Philippines as part of this WHO health program. And then she actually moved to Australia to do her PhD. And my dad actually went to the UK to do a master's.
Presumably you've reunited with mum and dad.
Yes, I did. Yeah. So
very good.
Yeah, that was to reunite with them. So I think early in my mind I had the idea that traveling for studying is a good thing.
I bet. You had it directly from mum and dad. Okay, so you got to Maroubra in Sydney was home for you. Is that right?
That's it. That's it. Yeah.
Were you a good student? I'm gonna say yes. Given what you've achieved after leaving school, I'm gonna presume you were a very good student.
Thank you for presuming that. But actually, I think when I came here, I was only 8 years old. I think I was just an average student, and I think my interest in school probably came a bit later, in sort of in primary school and early high school, to sort of do well. Yes. It took me a while to get interested in different things. And I think once I got interested in it, I think my first interest was science. I became very obsessive about it. I would read all the books. And then that moved on to English. And then by the time I got to high school, I was much better, actually.
And so you're in year 12. Did you know what you wanted to do when you, I mean, everyone's faced with that challenge. What was going through your mind when you thought, okay, I'm leaving school, what's next?
Yeah, so actually, I by the time I got to year 12, I had a long list of careers I wanted to do, A to Z, pretty much.
What was on the list, Shin?
I think the first one was science, and it was astrophysics and astronomy. The second was probably architecture, to be honest. And medicine, well, the problem with medicine was that my parents studied that, so I was quite rebellious at the time. And
yes.
Actually, intentionally did not enroll into medicine.
What did they want you to do? Did they want you to be a doctor?
Well, they were a bit worried about architecture, to be absolutely honest.
Yes.
But I think they didn't mind science. They thought that was, you know, good groundwork.
Okay.
Medicine, they thought, well, you know, that's a very responsible job. And I think because they went through it, they thought, you know, it had the social and humanity aspect, which was quite interesting. But yeah, so they had a few opinions, but they were very busy with work. So I kind of pretty much got to decide for myself.
Looking at my notes here, you studied physics and astronomy, is that right?
Yeah, so I enrolled in a science degree at the University of Sydney, and I actually did a combined physics and physiology major. So within physics, I studied astrophysics as my primary number of subjects, and then within the physics.
What is astrophysics?
So it's a physics way to look at astronomy. So astronomy, which is what I think lots of people have heard about, is looking at stars, but astrophysics is looking at how stars work. What's the physical principle behind how a star is making light, for example? So it's sort of going in at it with a more of a, I guess, a nerdy approach, if you like.
I love it. Yes. Are there many jobs in astrophysics? I mean, I don't know, in astronomy?
Yeah, so it's not bad, because in Australia it is a big focus, and I think there are there's a strong tradition of astrophysics in Australia, because we're quite strong, in particular when I was studying at radio astronomy too, because Australia, you know, was relatively radio quiet. So lots of observatories were set up there. So I think I could have continued, but I was quite young and I wanted to try everything. So that was one of the things I did.
And so that's amazing. How did you then end up in medicine?
Yeah, so that was quite a long journey, actually, because I really wanted to be sure that I was doing it for the right reasons, because lots of other of my friends, lots of people were applying to get into medicine when I was young. So actually, I think the thought about the medicine and the humanities came when I was actually studying astronomy, and I came across this principle called the anthropocentric model of the world, of the universe, and it's sort of talking about how we're looking at the universe, but through the eyes of humans, through our perspective. Okay. I thought, wow, okay, so that's really important, you know, how people think, and so that kind of made me start to look more inwards. And I realized that I really actually like talking to people. So even when I was studying astronomy and astrophysics, I was working at Sydney Observatory where I was talking to lots of members of the public.
Okay.
So then I thought, okay, well, I'll just try medicine, give it a go. Maybe I'll like it. And if I don't, I can always do something else.
You finished your degree and then you thought, okay, what's next?
Yeah. So I finished my science degree and I thought, okay, yeah, what's next?
I'll just jump into medicine.
And I did, to be absolutely honest, I did take a year out to try architecture just to make sure I wasn't going to.
Did you? Yeah, that. Okay. And how was that? How'd you find it?
I liked it as well. But coming from a science background, I think it did seem more subjective to me and I wasn't able to sort of cross that line anymore. So sort of I came back to something science but applied.
Okay. Yep. And then you thought, right, medicine, jump straight in. And how long was that degree?
So the degree is 4 years. And then the training for medicine, so afterwards, so working and learning at the same time, that's, I think, 8 years now.
Wow.
I just finished my neurology specialization training last year.
And so tell me about that. So you've moved into neurology and you're specifically looking at dementia. I mean, that is a massive field of interest for everyone. So I'm keen to know more about that, how that developed.
Yes. Yeah, so I think I always wanted to do neurology when I went to medicine. I don't know if you've heard of Oliver Sacks. He's this writer who's passed away now in psychiatry and neurology, and he always made his neurology patient cases very interesting. It's always about the human experience. You know, what mm-hmm. would happen if, you know, you couldn't recognize faces? You know, what would your experience be? Things like that. So I thought that was a great way to see the world. So I've always wanted to do neurology and neuroscience. It took a lot of determination, though, because there was definitely a lot of temptation as I moved through medicine. Oh, what about another subject? Or
you cast a big net, yes.
Yeah, I tried psychiatry for a little bit, but I think neurology is sort of a perfect blend of applying the hardcore science. So we had to know quite a bit of the anatomy of the brain, but then talking to patients and you know, a patient might say, well, I can't, put, you know, a visual scene together. I can't sort of tell things apart. And then we'll be able to say, well, okay, that makes sense from an anatomy point of view because, you know, that part of your brain's not working. So I think that's really interesting. And then through sort of your own understanding of science and talking to patients and listening to them, you can kind of help them understand what's going on and make peace with it and work from there. So I think that's it's really meaningful to me.
And how, Shin, did the scholarship come about?
Okay, so I really wanted to do a PhD and I've always wanted to do one ever since my mom started doing hers back when I was...
Yes, okay. Back to mum.
And finally I was finishing my neurology training, so the opportunity opened up. I now have a bit of choice in what I wanted to do. So then I was looking at scholarships because going overseas as an Australian to do international PhD is not easy. There's international student fees and so forth.
Yeah, okay, understood.
Yeah, so I browsed the internet and I came across John Monash, the foundation, and I was just blown away by what it offered. It seemed too good to be true, but it was.
I think it is. Yes. And what did you think? Okay, well, I'm going to have a shot at this.
I thought I'm going to have a shot at this. Lots of people told me, oh, you know, that's too competitive, you know, not sure. But I just sort of kept going and I got it. And so
amazing. And so what's the plan? So that's clearly brought you to the UK for a PhD. So where do you go? When do you start? How does it all come together?
Yeah. So I am I am trying to sort out the logistics of that right now, now that I'm in London. It is, I think, a neurology or a medical PhD could be potentially trickier to organize than a another sort of PhD by coursework or another sort of PhD by research, because I'll be seeing dementia patients, and so part of that project will require me to work as a doctor in some degree. So I'll have to get an affiliation with a hospital and an affiliation with a university. And there's sort of potentially lots of contracts involved.
So are you working as a doctor at the moment?
Yes, I am. So right now I have come back to the National Hospital for Neurology and Neurosurgery. And I'm doing a fellowship at the moment that's been given to me by Australian New Zealand Association of Neurologists. It is a very sought after fellowship, actually, and it's a clinical fellowship where I get to be introduced to the hospital affiliated with the University College London, where potentially I could do a PhD with.
Okay. Yes.
And then so it gets me a doctor role. And I get to know how the healthcare system work here and sort of the culture of the people here. So I think that's all very important for gearing up for a clinical PhD.
What are the noticeable differences between the healthcare system in, say, England from that in Australia?
I think England has more of a public approach in their NHS healthcare model. So there's quite a few differences, actually. It's more integrated. There are private clinics, but it's quite uncommon. But what's similar with Australia is that the complex patients mostly go to public hospitals. So the public hospitals are still the places to train in. Differences and similarities there. But the doctors and nurses here, they work very hard. They're very dedicated. Very inspiring.
Of course. And so I understand dementia treatment and further study is very close to your heart. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so sorry, I haven't started talking so much about dementia yet. So dementia is, I think, one of the last frontiers of medicine in my mind. It's a bit like astronomy and astrophysics. It's, you know, there's so much that we don't understand about it, and it is not very easy to study because people are alive and the brains are, you know, well within their skull. So it's very you have to study the brain indirectly, you know, through measuring behavior or doing, you know, MRIs, CT scans. And currently, unfortunately, we haven't found a cure for dementia.
No. Are we close? Where are we at on that journey?
Yeah, so I think we're getting close. But the problem with dementia is it's such a complex entity. So it's a bit like how cancer was, I think, back many decades ago. You know, there's not just one type of cancer, there's many different types. And that's the same thing with dementia. You know, there's the familiar ones that we heard about, like Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, but there's also rarer dementias where we find a gene responsible for. There's young people younger than 65 with young onset dementias. So I think probably the trick to trying to find a cure for dementia is actually probably picking off the easier patients to cure, and not everyone will get the same treatment at the same time. It might be more of a personalized treatment.
So once you're diagnosed with dementia, you might not be able to answer this. What is the prognosis, or how does it work from there?
Yeah, I think every patient will be different, so it will depend on what stage they are already when you see them. And unfortunately, a lot of the time people present late with their symptoms. They might have had nagging memory issues for a year or two before they come. And so it is hard to say, but at the moment we're looking at generally years, some are faster than others in terms of prognosis. And it is a very long journey for the patient and for their carers as well. I think the carers suffer quite a lot.
Of course they do. Yes.
It's meaningful for them too, and they love the patient. But it is tough for them.
Are there any treatments, even experimental treatments on the market that are showing promise?
Yeah, so there's been lots of treatments being trialed right now and in the past as well. I think the most famous recently was a drug called aducanumab, which was approved in the USA actually. There's been a lot of discussion in Australia and in Europe about whether we should do the same, because this drug has shown some results, because actually what it's meant to do is meant to mop up this protein called amyloid, which is considered bad when it builds up in the brain. And it does do that. It mops up the protein. You can see it on the scans. But the patients, when you look at their function and sort of they don't seem to improve, really, not that much. So
it's having, like, you're right, it's having an effect physically on the brain, but for the patient there's no noticeable difference.
Yeah, very hard. It's very contested, and it's quite an invasive treatment. You have to be hooked up to a drip, and it's a bit like some of the treatments you might get for cancer as well. I imagine that's how a lot of the medication for dementia might start out anyway. So the debate for it is that, well, it's, you know, we should try it, and then we'll get the infrastructure in so that when we have a more effective treatment for dementia, you know, we've already got the infrastructure ready. But then the cons is that patients with dementia, they are keen for any drug. And if you give them an option, most of them will say, we'll try it. But what if it doesn't work? So that's, I think, where the debate is. And I think my college, the ANZEN, is actually hopefully going to make a statement very soon about that. So which
part of the world is the leading force in trying to find a cure for this? Is it in Europe? Is it in the UK?
So I think that the main centres are US and Europe and UK. Yes, I think that in the English speaking world, definitely US and UK. Mm-hmm. But in the non English speaking world, there's also lots of other attempts as well. Australia, I think we have trials as well, but we often take part in them along with the other countries.
I see. And so is this something you'd like to investigate in your PhD? Is this going to be the focus of your further studies?
Yes, I hope so. So for me, because of my background and interest in physics, I always thought that I'd be better at sort of the physical parts of dementia diagnosis. And that the problem with dementia is that right now, as evidenced by this recent drug, it's very difficult to measure response to drug treatment. A lot of the measurements are just questionnaire based, and some days people will feel better, some days people will feel worse. It's very hard to be very precise with assessment of dementia that way. So I think what I want to do is try to have this more objective measure of brain function. And we can do that by looking at sort of electrical activity of the brain, magnetic activity of the brain, things like that, which was sort of more steady state. So then, for example, if we do have the next drug that potentially could work, we could measure the patient's brain function before taking the drug and then measure it afterwards, and then we might be able to have a better answer than asking the patient and their carers if they've gotten better.
And tell me, Shin, once you let's sort of fast forward a little bit, once you hopefully finish your studies in the UK. Is it your intention to continue working there, work in another part of the world, come back to Australia? Do you have a plan yet?
Well, right now I do miss Australia already. I'm a bit homesick, so I definitely...
You've only been there for a couple of months.
Yeah, that's right. But I am. Australia's a beautiful country, and I intend to come back. And my parents are also there, so... and there's a lot to do there as well, professionally. So
we need you back here.
Yeah. And I've worked in Sydney and New South Wales for so long that I've really gotten to know the local communities. So I want to come back and help those communities out if possible with dementia care. Yeah.
Well, Shin, thank you very much for coming onto the show today. It's been a real honour talking with you. You're a champion, and thank you so much for your time, and we wish you all the very best for your studies and the years ahead. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time too, Justin. Thank you.